What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a critical care pharmacy podcast. This is episode 276. In this episode, I'll review the 2018 edition of Top 100 Drug Interactions. This is my favorite pharmacy reference book on drug interactions, and it's been updated just this month for 2018. The authors, Hansden and Horn, call this the Top 100 Drug Interactions, a Guide to Patient Management. Third-party drug interaction services are often of little to no use in determining the clinical significance of a potential drug interaction. Whether it's fear of being sued or some other reason, many references overstate the risk of a potential drug interaction, and they water down their service with including many drug interactions of minimal to no actual clinical risk. What makes Hansden and Horn's guide my favorite is they're willing to accurately state the risk of potential drug interactions and only include in the guide interactions they feel are clinically significant. This makes Top 100 Drug Interactions a guide that can be counted on to provide practical advice for managing drug interactions without any unnecessary fluff. Hansden and Horn use an operational classification system for classifying drug interactions, which they published in 2001. They describe five different classification levels for drug interactions based on risk versus benefit and the action that must be taken. A class one interaction is that there is no situation where the benefit outweighs the risk, such as combining pseudoephedrine plus a monoamine oxidase inhibitor. A class 2 interaction would be to avoid use unless there's no alternative or the interaction is desired, such as warfarin plus aspirin. Class 3 is an interaction an increased risk exists, but monitoring may be an acceptable course of action, such as a low dose of fluconazole with other 3A4 substrates. Class 4 is minimal risk of interaction, and class 5 is no interaction. While their guide now contains far more than 100 potential drug interactions, the authors do a superb job focusing on only the clinically relevant interactions that are class 1, 2, or 3. Not all drug interactions are known, and new drugs arrive on the market with limited interaction data. So to allow clinicians to predict pharmacokinetic drug interactions in unstudied combinations, Hansden and Horn also include in their guide an extensive listing of medications that affect and are affected by the cytochrome P450 system, as well as other transporters such as P-glycoprotein. And you can see a little image of what this chart looks like linked in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode276. But the chart allows clinicians to identify interactions between enzyme inhibitors, inducers, and substrates. In addition, if a medication has a primary pathway of elimination that goes through several different enzymes, the primary pathway is identified in the chart. This extra piece of information can be used to hypothesize on the degree to which an interaction may be significant. So, for example, although amitriptyline is metabolized by 1A2, 2C19, 2D6, 3A4, and PGP, the primary pathway of elimination is 2D6. So using this information, a clinician may choose to allow the use of a 3A4 inhibitor with amitriptyline with the knowledge that many other pathways for elimination exist. Hansden & Horn's Top 100 Drug Interactions also contains guidance for antibiotic interactions with warfarin, interactions with herbal products, as well as genetic polymorphisms of cytochrome P450 enzymes. But the best section of the Top 100 Drug Interactions handbook has to do with evaluating QTC drug interactions. My own personal method for evaluating QTC interactions draws strongly from Hansden and Horn's book, and I do discuss this extensively back in episode 12. So if you have not listened to that, go back and take a listen at pharmacyjoe.com/episode12, where I talk about QTC drug interactions. But in brief, here, the two things I keep in mind about these QTC interactions are, number one, to be risk averse whenever possible. Take, for example, a patient with no allergies on Sotalol, prescribed levofloxacin for CAP. As long as their renal function is good, this is a low-risk interaction that you could just monitor. But ceftriaxone plus doxycycline is just as good for CAP and completely avoids any risk of torsades. So why would I take the risk when I have another first-line treatment that doesn't include a torsades risk? Now, things get murkier when you're having to decide between using a second-line drug or monitoring the interaction. So take the same patient, but give them anaphylaxis to penicillin. Would vanco plus aztreonam plus doxy provide the best cure for their pneumonia? How do I balance the added risk of toxicity that using vancomycin brings? So sticking with the levofloxacin and monitoring the patient in the hospital might be more reasonable here. And this brings me to my second point that I keep in mind, and that is EKGs are cheap and non-invasive, and you should have no hesitation asking for one if the purpose is to evaluate or monitor a QTC drug interaction. Literally, the cost to the hospital is the ink and paper. The machine and the technician's salary to perform the EKG have already been paid for, and this fixed cost just doesn't enter into the equation. You can get a direct link to Hanson Horn's new book in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode276. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.